The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Heart of Innovation, 60 minutes that can save life and limb with new breakthrough ideas and innovation changing the healthcare landscape. Brought to you by patient advocacy group, thewaytomyheart.org, in partnership with Abbott. Here are your hosts for the Heart of Innovation, Emmy Award-winning journalist and founder of The Way to My Heart, Kim McNicholas, and interventional cardiologist and founder of the Save My Piggies Health Education Series, Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the show. We are live again. We had been off for a couple of weeks with pre-recorded shows, but we are back. Well, at least I'm back. Dr. John Phillips is vacationing somewhere, and then he'll be back next week to save more piggies. But I am pleased to be joined by Dr. Anita Dua. She is a vascular surgeon out of Mass General. She's a force to be reckoned with, 2023 Presidential Scholar of the Year, also a board member, very cherished board member for the Global PAD Association. We always talk about PAD, peripheral artery disease. It's actually my organization. We started to help people who have that disease, blocked arteries in mainly the leg, that impact about 3 in 5 people who suffer a heart attack, 1 in 5 adults over age 60, and 1 in 3 diabetics over age 50. So definitely, she's keeping busy in treating so many patients over there in Boston. Thank you so much, Anita Dua, for joining us and for all you do to save life and limb.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I am a vascular surgeon at Mass General Hospital in Boston and an associate professor of surgery at Harvard Medical School. Also in, you know, taking care of people with limbs, there's lots of other things that need to be taken care of. For example, I'm associate director of our wound care center. Super important if you have any issues with your legs. I'm the ex-director of our vascular lab. And I also am the clinical director of research, which is what we're kind of going to be talking about today, because there's a lot to do in this space.
Well, before we jump into the topic of the day, Dr. John Phillips always starts off with some words of inspiration. And I have one here just to honor you a little bit, because it speaks to who you are. A truly great doctor, hard to find, difficult to part with, impossible to forget. Truth.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, today we are talking about something that I think is so incredibly important. We hear from patients every single day that they're on these blood thinners. They have questions about them. They don't know if they're right for them. They don't know if they're working for them. They can't figure out why they might not be working for them. Their doctors don't know. They try a bunch of different combinations and cocktails, and still they end up with blood clots or stents don't, you know, continue to remain open. I mean, there are so many questions when it comes to blood thinners. We're going to try and sort that out. What I love about you, Dr. Dua, is ever since I started this journey in working with patients who have peripheral artery disease and cardiovascular disease, frontline treatment is always medicine therapy. But I never feel like, you know, there is this customized approach, and there's always this, trial and error. Let's see if this works. If it doesn't, let's try something else. And no one had done anything about it. No one else seems to be looking into it. Everyone seems to be just accepting it as is, except for you.
You are totally correct. And there's a reason for that. It's been affecting our patients and our families for a long time. So understanding what blood thinners are and how they work and why they don't work is incredibly important to the patient journey.
Yeah, I just don't understand why. I mean, is it something, and not to be derogatory or anything, but I mean, is it something that some doctors just say, you know what, this is what I learned in medical school. This is the way it is. This is what the drug companies tell me, and I'm just going to follow this to the letter of law.
It's actually, unfortunately, worse than that. You know, doctors are trying to do their best, but imagine a situation where you're standing in the front of a jungle and you're supposed to navigate through this jungle, and the jungle is full of horrible things, you know, poisonous snakes and horrible pits and whatnot. And someone says, all right, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to blindfold you and you just go for it. And what's going to happen is out of 100 people that take off, you know, a certain proportion of them are going to die on the way. And maybe somebody incredibly lucky just by chance is going to make it out to the other end of the jungle. And what we're sort of seeing is that a lot of our decision making in terms of blood thinners is made that way, blindly and with a one size fits all. Everybody's doing kind of the same thing. And it's not because there is a better way that doctors are just ignoring. It's because we don't know what the better way is. And I'll get into why that is and what the lacking knowledge is as to why we do things the way we do today.
So should we start? Because this is going, I'm so excited to just jump right in, but I know we need to just pedal backward just a little bit and talk about, let's define blood thinners. Let's talk about the different types and when the indications for them.
Perfect. So let's first take even a further step back and talk about issues with your legs that have to do with vascular disease. And we're going to paint a picture here. Okay. Peripheral artery disease, PAD, is basically an umbrella term that encompasses two types of problems. Problem number one, simply, it hurts when you walk. You walk, your calves hurt, you got to stop, you don't have any wounds on your feet, you're able to just sit and watch TV without pain, but when you start walking, man, it hurts. When you start going upstairs, it hurts. Inclines, it hurts. That type of disease is called intermittent claudication, which is just Latin for it hurts when I walk. And that type of disease is purely managed medically. But a cornerstone of that medical therapy is blood thinning. Now we're going to talk about the other type. The other type that sits under PAD, under this umbrella, is critical limb ischemia, which basically is where you need some type of surgical or procedural intervention to get more blood flow to your feet. Because you either have a wound that's not healing, or you have pain in your feet when you're just sitting around at rest. That's serious. That can lead to amputation. In that category as well, after your procedure, you absolutely need some type of blood thinner in order to keep your patency or openness of the blood vessel that we just created going. Because in a patient that has a wound, especially a diabetic patient, there's something called the 200-day rule. The 200-day rule is, after you come to me and I get you blood flow to your leg, we need 200 days of that waterfall of blood flow going for that wound to actually heal. You don't come to me and say, hey, one of my arteries is blocked. Can you unblock it? No, you come to me and say, I have a wound on my foot. Make it go away. And me going in there and just opening up the blood vessel, patting myself on the back and sending you out the door isn't good enough, because I'll get a beautiful image at the end of my procedure, but you will not heal your wound if we don't keep your blood flow going. So we're going to talk a little bit now in the next segment about what types of medical therapy in the blood thinner space we give people, what the different categories are and how they work differently. So in the next step, we're going to talk about that.
You are here listening to The Heart of Innovation with Kim McNichols and Dr. Anita Dua. Don't go anywhere. You will be hearing them and more on 860 AM, The Answer. Stay tuned.
Leg health can indicate risk for heart attack, stroke, and amputation. If you have leg pain or cramps while walking, get checked for peripheral artery disease, or PAD. PAD is plaque buildup in mainly the leg arteries. Be sure to ask your physician for an ankle brachial index, also called an ABI test, where they use blood pressure cuffs to analyze the blood pressure in your legs. If they discover you have arterial plaque that's limiting blood flow to your feet, medicine and a regimented walking program are frontline treatment. If PAD is in its advanced advanced stages, your physician may schedule a surgical intervention. Minimally invasive tools are available to remove plaque and restore blood flow, including Cardiovascular Systems Diamondback 360 atherectomy system, which sands away plaque that is a hard calcium. It's important to discuss all options with your physician, and if told you have no options, get a second opinion. Take a stand against amputation. For more information, go to standagainstamputation.com. That's standagainstamputation.com.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited.
They do not give up until you pay.
They put a lien on my house.
How about you? Do you owe back taxes? Call Tax Solutions now and get some help. For a limited time, the IRS offers a tax forgiveness program called the Fresh Start Initiative. Our team can make it easier for you to pay back taxes, avoid tax liens, and get a fresh start. Sometimes you just need a second chance.
I call Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
At Tax Solutions Now, our affiliates are all accredited by the Better Business Bureau and members of the National Association of Tax Professionals.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Time is running out. Call Tax Solutions Now. Call 800-329-2077. 800-329-2077. 800-329-2077. 800-329-2077.
This is 860 AM, The Answer.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Dr. John Phillips is out on vacation. He'll be back to save some more piggies. Save my piggies. That's his slogan. Sometime next week. But meantime, we are honored to be joined by Dr. Anita Dubois with Mass General in Boston. She's also 2023 Presidential Scholar of the Year. She's absolutely amazing. Doing some very impactful research right now on blood thinners. If you have any sort of vascular disease, whether it's peripheral artery disease or cardiovascular disease, you at one point have been prescribed a blood thinner or two, or will be at some point in your life. And so we're talking to Dr. Dubois about some of the research that's being done right now, because Dr. Dubois, there's so much still we don't know about what blood thinner and what combination of blood thinners are right for every single individual. And that's something that you're looking into.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we just talked about the different types of procedures that happen to get blood flow down to the legs and what can happen in someone with peripheral artery disease. So before we jump into basically how we give blood thinners, let's talk about blood thinners. They're one of the mysteries. I'll tell you this, as a doctor, I'm a vascular surgeon. I've done general surgery and vascular surgery. The most confusing thing for people when they study, doctors, when we study, is blood thinning. So you're not alone if you don't know what is happening. A lot of people don't know what is happening. But I'm going to really break it down for you here. So there are two types of blood thinners, okay? Two types of categories. Category number one are called antiplatelets. Category number two is called anticoagulant. Now, what's the difference between these two things? I want you to think of a pancake. Imagine waking up in the morning and you're making a pancake, right? And let's say that your husband puts in front of you a pancake that he cooked and it looks terrible. And he says, I used 50 eggs and one cup of flour. You would be like, oh, okay, too many eggs. But let's say he puts in front of you a pancake where he says, I used 50 cups of flour and only one egg. Both pancakes are disgusting, but for different reasons. Clot is like that pancake. A clot forms with a variety of ingredients that come together to form this chunky thing that causes trouble. But these different ingredients and how they interact forms a clot that can either be bad because it's got, quote unquote, too many eggs or too many platelets, or because there's too much flour, there's too much glue. Because essentially all a clot is a bunch of platelets, which are like, think of little Legos, that are stuck together by glue that's called fibrin. So antiplatelet medication shuts down platelets, prevents them from joining together like Legos. Anticoagulants prevent the glue from forming, what's called the fibrin. And if you take both, you're kind of double hitting it. You're not letting your Legos connect. You're not letting your Legos get stuck together. both things solved. Now, the problem comes with, if you come to me and I do a procedure in you and I just give you whatever I feel like giving you to stop your blood from clotting, maybe I'm giving you the wrong thing. Maybe your platelets are not the problem. It's been your fibrin all this time, but I didn't give you a drug to deal with that. Or maybe I give you too much of that drug, and now you come in with a brain bleed, or you come in with blood coming out of your nose, and as soon as you hit the ER, what do? Stop everything, which is also bad for you. Because we're doing these huge swings because we don't exactly know what your blood is doing right now and how we are specifically personalizing the way in which we give you blood thinner. Why don't we do that? Because we don't know what we're doing in this space.
It's so interesting that you say that, because we just had someone post in our group yesterday that they're in the hospital because of some sort of stomach bleed. And the doctor immediately took them off all of their blood thinners, just immediately, without even checking with the regular supervising vascular specialist, just took them off everything. And it's something that they even told my dad. They actually gave him some sort of, antacid to prevent ulcers in his stomach in order to reduce the risk of a potential stomach bleed. Because as you said, well, there's no real art to, well, is it art? No real science, I guess it is, to actually prescribing these blood thinners.
Exactly correct. We have to be careful with that, because there's a lot of data, but it's not specific. So right now, if you and I get a breast lump and we go to a doctor, they're going to take a biopsy. They're going to see what type of breast cancer we may have. And then they're going to treat us with chemotherapy according to what you have and what I have. We may present the same way, but we're going to get different care. Unfortunately, when you're dealing with PAD and blood thinners, there's no way to do that test to figure out what your blood, Kim, is doing today versus what my blood is doing. And so we have to be really careful about the way in which we give blood thinners, because what happens is when you give too much, for example, and a patient comes in like the patient you just described with maybe vomiting blood, that's a very dramatic thing and that can kill them. So the safe thing to do is to say, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going on, but I know that we got to make your blood not so thin, so I'm going to stop everything. The problem with that is that if you have a graft in your leg or a stent in your leg, and now that thing shuts down because you don't have any blood thinner on board, you may get an amputation and then you may die because of that, but that's going to be down the line, like a year from now. So no one's going to connect, oh, it was my lack of appropriate blood thinner that ultimately killed this patient. But when it's a bleed, it's very dramatic. You come in, you bleed and you die. Yes, the bleed caused the death. And that kind of dramatic aspect is what makes us be so aggressive and careful about bleeding, but maybe not as careful as we should be about clotting. So what we do currently is, there's a lot of data out there, but it comes from the cardiology space. It comes from years and years of rotating through blood vessels in the heart to stop heart attacks and what type of blood thinners we were giving for that, and extrapolating that information and saying, okay, you know what? It's probably the same thing for PAD patients. Hey, guess what though? It's not. Because a blood vessel in the leg is like 3 times bigger than a blood vessel in the heart. And you have much longer segments that have problems. A blood heart vessel is about the size of my finger in terms of length. But a blood vessel in the leg is much, much longer. And of course, you're moving your legs around. So we don't really have data to determine, well, what's the stuff that's inside? What's it made up of? And what are the best blood thinners for that person at that time? If a blood thinner I give you today is working amazing, but let's say something horrible happens in your life and you start smoking, well, I need to do something different now because your chance of clotting is much higher. But I have no way of testing your blood to figure out what's worse and what I should do about it.
Right. We have Marcia that was writing in, and she asks, and you just answered, is there a way to test the blood to determine which you need? And the answer is no.
The answer is no today, but that is the research I'm working on at Mass General, and I think I've got it. And I'm going to share that with you guys today, how you can test the blood, what we're doing in our institution specifically already, and hopefully what will be kind of the new world order in terms of how we check patients and can change the way things are. So, you know, to understand, though, the most important thing and where we need to land is right now we have no way of testing patients' blood to personalize the way in which we give them blood thinners. Blood thinners exist that are excellent However, we don't know which combination is best for what patients, and different patients do need different things. So we need to pick up and talk about how we're going to identify these aspects so that we can treat patients right.
Fantastic. And I think we're going to go to break. So stay with us right here on the Heart of Innovation, and we'll be back with more with Dr. Anita Dua. Don't go away.
Three years ago, my symptoms started with leg pain and leg cramps while walking.
Me too, with a tightness in my calves.
Well, do you know, my doctor thought that my leg cramps were a side effect of the statin he prescribed me.
Well, my doctor just brushed them off as another symptom of old age.
Mine thought the pain was radiating from my spine.
My doctor blamed my neuropathy on diabetes until I got a wound on my foot that just wouldn't heal.
Yeah, it turns out we all have peripheral artery disease, also known as PAD.
It's plaque buildup mainly in the leg arteries causing poor circulation.
For me, the diagnosis came too late and I lost my leg, but that does not have to happen to you.
No, it does not, because there are treatment options available if you're diagnosed early enough.
PAD, peripheral artery disease. If you've been experiencing leg pain, leg cramps, or neuropathy when walking, and your doctor isn't hearing you, we are. We are the Way to My Heart, the largest support network for peripheral artery disease patients, and we want to help you get back on your feet again. Visit our website at thewaytomyheart.org or call our Leg Saver hotline, 415-320-7138. Your life and limb could depend on it.
Oil investments involve a high degree of risk and actual results may vary.
Oil and natural gas keep going up as the Russia conflict escalates. Get in on the next major oil boom now and help the U.S. with your patriotic investment that can potentially pay you monthly income for up to 20 or more years. That's the sound of a producing oil well and the sound of a smart investment. If you're an SEC-accredited investor and have at least $25,000 liquid now, you can take advantage of Encore Energy's projects and a huge tax savings for this year. If you invest in oil and natural gas, you're allowed to write off nearly 100% of your investment in the first year. Goldman Sachs is projecting oil to go up to $100 a barrel, and natural gas is the fuel of the future and trading at record prices. Call 800-287-6691. Encore Energy is a major investor and experienced operator in its core area of operations. Call now and learn how to deduct 100% of your investment and create 20 or more years of potential monthly income. Call 800-287-6691. That's 800-287-6691.
We all know that aches and pains come with simply getting older, but it doesn't mean you have to accept it. That's why I want to tell you about a special lady, Leah from Ohio, and her relief factor story. One Sunday, Leah was sitting on the couch in so much pain, she was literally in tears. That's when she decided to try Relief Factor. Just 8 days later, she found relief, and she continued to get better and better. To quote her, she said, "I am truly amazed at this product. Like me, who after 9, almost 10 years, almost a decade of low back pain, lost that pain thanks to Relief Factor. If you're living with aches and pain, see how Relief Factor, a daily drug-free supplement, could help you feel and live better every day. Get the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. It all comes with a feel better or your money back guarantee. That number, 1-800-4-RELIEF, relieffactor.com.
860 AM, The Answer.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Dr. John Phillips is off today. We have Dr. Anita Dua that is here in his place, and she and I are just taking the world by storm talking about blood thinners today. Everything that you need to know about where we are at in terms of prescribing blood thinners and future research that is to be done in order to personalize the prescribing of these medications for you if you have any sort of vascular disorder. Dr. Dua, I think that we should kick off this segment, you know, just giving us, you know, just a recap. Where are we at right now with blood thinners, prescribing them, and the research that's out there?
Sure. So as we talked about, there are two types of blood thinners, antiplatelet and anticoagulant, and they do different things. With antiplatelets right now, really aspirin and Plavix or clopidogrel, which is the same medication, are kind of the mainstay, and they've been around for years and years and years. The problem is that up to 10% of people are completely resistant to aspirin. It doesn't work on you. You might as well take M&Ms. And in Plavix or clopidogrel, 25% of people, one in four people, fully resistant. Same thing. You might as well be taking nothing. Which means that one size fits all isn't good, because if we're giving people aspirin and Plavix after their procedures, you might be the one in four that it doesn't work for. In terms of the anticoagulants out there, warfarin, Xarelto, Eliquis, these are the medications that are out there. Some of you may be on them. We don't have a big resistance issue in this group. What we have in this group is we have no way of monitoring it except for warfarin, where people do INR, where they do finger stick checks. But that's a lot of work, and you have to work to keep yourself right in the right kind of space. And the issue with that is people can overshoot it and they can bleed. So what's the state of the union right now? What are we doing as doctors? Well, we're doing whatever we want is actually the answer. There's a little bit of data that's out there sort of guiding. If you do a procedure on a patient's blood vessel between their thigh and their knee, you should give them two antiplatelet medications. So give them aspirin and Plavix. If you do more than that, there is some data out there that says that you can give 2.5 of what's called rivaroxaban, which is Xarelto, which is a new data that came out that said, hey, you know, that it's good for these patients. But the problem in that study is if you actually take all the patients that have this disease, only 30% of them would have even been eligible to be in that study, which basically means that the study is not something that everyone would fit into. The long and short of it is, I believe we're just managing this totally wrong. All these years we've been saying, what procedure have you had? This is the blood thinner I should give you. Instead, what we should be saying is, who are you? And what procedure you had is a piece of who you are. And this is the blood thinner you should get. For example, if you and me, Kim, let's say are the same weight, are the same height, we're both women, but I smoke two packs of cigarettes a day, you smoke nothing, I have diabetes and you don't have diabetes, but we both get the same procedure, it would make no sense to give us the same medication. I'll clot off because I've got all these extra risk factors, but you don't. So what we should actually be doing is testing each of our blood and seeing what is our panel of clotting look like right now, and then treating it accordingly. Because what did I just say? We have all these blood thinners that can work on the Lego pieces, that can work on the glue. We just don't know which gun should be pulled for this particular fight.
Are the blood panels available today that can help a physician get a better indication as to what's happening in the blood and potentially which current prescription drug is available and is best for that patient?
So that is exactly what we are working on in my lab. So as I said, I'm at Mass General. I have an NIH-funded lab that looks at clotting. What we have used is there is a test out there called thromboelastography, or TEG, T-E-G, okay? Thromboelastography is a fancy way of saying I can take some blood, a blood sample from you, I can put it on a little credit card type thing and stick it in a machine, hit a button, and it gives me a chart that tells me exactly how thick and thin your blood is and what aspects of the clotting, what part of that pancake is being affected. Now,
wow.
The thing about it is, so what if I can tell you that? Let's say I can take your blood today and I can say, yeah, Kim, you know what? Your platelets are doing this and your blood clotting is doing that. A doctor would be like, that's great. What do I do with this? Do I give her Eliquis? Do I give her? Somebody has to also discover, well, what is the magic number at which your body will not clot, but also not bleed? Because I don't want to overshoot, give you too much, and now you're having a brain bleed either. So what we did for the first 5 years in my lab is we found that number. We took blood from a bunch of patients, 100-something patients, and we actually analyzed it on the TEG machine. Of that 100-and-something patients, there was a particular proportion of them that did clot. And we looked at their TEG numbers and found that the TEG numbers, 1 month before they clotted, can predict that they were going to clot. And then we identified at what level of platelet function they actually clotted. That's a mouthful to say that I can now take your blood, see where you are specifically, and then treat you accordingly to make sure that you don't clot and you don't bleed. And we've implemented that now already at Mass General in a study. And I'll tell you a bit about those study results after we come back.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think we should go to the break right now a little bit early because there's a lot to unpack here. And I want to make sure that we can get to everything. And I know we do have some questions that are coming in from our audience. So make sure everyone stays with us. We're going to go to break. We'll be back in a few.
Medical Notepad, brought to you by the Global PAD Association and Abbott. This episode, Dr. Eric Sasemski talks about high blood pressure.
High blood pressure, for everybody out there, is really when the flow of blood down your blood vessels is going at a higher pressure than is safe for our organs. So if you think about turning on a faucet and the water flying out and spraying all over, that is, you know, high flow. That can cause high pressure. And if you put something in front of it, like a thin piece of glass, you can fracture it. You know, in the body, when there's high flow, high pressure like that, a lot of our organs are sensitive to this. In particular, our brains, our hearts, our kidneys. These organs don't like that pressure pushing up against the small vessels, pushing up against the pumping heart, and it causes problems over time. It can cause dissections and aneurysms in the brain. It can cause thickening of the heart muscle, weakening of the heart and holding on to fluid. And it can cause pressure on the kidneys to the point that the kidneys start to scar and fail. And one out of every two people in the U.S. has high blood pressure. One Wow. out of every two people. So this isn't, you know, you walk in the mall and maybe one person in the mall has this condition. It's everywhere you turn. And so it's also been labeled the silent killer for a reason, because the hard part with the high blood pressure is the majority of people do not know they have it. We very infrequently, you know, develop symptoms early on in the process of high blood pressure. So we could be walking around for years, decades with high blood pressure that's uncontrolled if we've not had any opportunity to see a primary care doctor, get our blood pressure read. Been willing to follow up. You know, there's a lot of really opportunities to intervene that are lost because it doesn't cause symptoms. And, you know, we often have other conditions that take precedence.
With this week's Medical Notepad, that was Dr. Eric Sasemski. Remember, the advice and views offered in this series are for informational and educational purposes only. Always check with your own healthcare team for explicit consent to follow any guidance offered here. If you have additional questions about vascular and cardiovascular issues, you can go to padhelp.org.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Dr. John Phillips is out. I told him that I invited Dr. Anita Dewa in so we could poke fun at him while he was gone. You know, we've spent a lot of time. We were in Italy together last year. And then, you know, girls took that Italy trip this year and left John behind.
Sure did.
But we have a really great discussion here. Really excited to talk about blood thinners because it's a question we always get asked about. Before we get back into the real heart of the discussion on new types of tests so that we can personalize these blood thinner prescriptions for patients, we do have a question that's coming in from Marie, and she wants me to ask, why is it that she might be still getting 100 lots and lots of clots, 100% clots, hundreds of them, while on three different blood thinners?
The answer to that usually is that there's some underlying genetic issue that is undiagnosed where she makes clots. So right now, and unfortunately, the way to actually approach that is you have to come off all blood thinners, and a hematologist who's a blood doctor has to do a number of tests to figure out if there is a genetic predisposition. There are indeed people out there that no matter what you give them will continue to clot. And you have to do mechanical things where you have to actually put a filter into their vein in order to prevent clot from shooting up and going to the lungs if it's from the veins, for example. So there, and it's usually women between the ages of like 40 to 60 around there where they present and they have severe clotting issues. and that can result in problems, unfortunately. So that's the likely reason. Basically, the other thing about it is that not all genetic predispositions have been discovered, unfortunately. So sometimes there are much more powerful blood thinners that we would have to give people who are having clots repeatedly form to get them over the hump, because the generic stuff will not work for them.
Oh, that's interesting to know. That is definitely something that, Marie, I know you're still listening, you should consider, and we should have that conversation with your hematologist about that. But back to the general discussion that we were talking about before the break, you have a lot of research that you're doing that could help. I would imagine it would be hematology that you would go to, to have these additional blood tests performed.
Actually,
that wouldn't
no.
be...
The really? Beauty of this is you can do it anywhere. That's the thing. You know, what I wanted to do is I didn't want a situation. So when I started, this problem is a major problem. One in five people who get a procedure will be back within 6 months for a repeat procedure. That the number is 20%. So 20% of people who get intervened upon will be intervened upon because they either clot off or they get tightening of their stent or whatever we did to them to open up their blood vessel. Mm-hmm. And obviously that means that they're taking blood thinners that are not working for them. So they're taking all the bleeding risk and yet get these unfortunate situations. And what I didn't want is, you know, we've been studying this problem for years and years and years and have not really come up with a solution. And the way that I look at it is, think for all of you that are diabetics out there, think about how you manage your diabetes. What do? In the morning, you take a finger stick, right? Or you have the thing on your arm that checks your blood and it gives you a number, right? And it says, hey, if this number is greater than 120 or less than 80, your blood sugar is out of whack. I don't care why it's out of whack. I don't care that it's because you just ate a whole box of Dunkin' Donuts or it's because you forgot to take your insulin last night. Whatever the reason is, this is your number right now, and this is the treatment. I wanted to do the same thing for blood thinner. I don't care if you have a genetic problem, if you didn't take your meds, if you're a 5-pack-a-day smoker, if you're black, if you're white, if you're a woman, if you're a man. All I want to know is, what's your blood doing right now? Because this is the treatment. That's what I was trying to create. And so what I did is, this test, this thromboelastography, already exists. It's been around since 1948. But we've been using it for bleeding, not for clotting. So what happened in the Iraq and Afghanistan war is our soldiers were stepping on basically landmines. They were blowing their legs up and they were bleeding torrentially. And our trauma surgeons were doing this TEG and Rotem, that's basically the same thing, and checking their blood and saying, okay, you know what? This soldier needs platelets. This soldier needs red blood. This soldier needs this. This surgeon needs to make them clot. So they were checking their bleeding, not their clotting, because the soldier was bleeding to death. And then they were giving them the appropriate components to get them to stop bleeding. My idea was, why can't we do the same thing just in the opposite direction? Look at the components of blood and get them to stop clotting. So I started using TEG and their special cartridges. And they're not expensive. They're because they've been around for so long. The only thing is that this company, so Haemonetics is the name of the company that makes this test. You know, again, it's been kind of, they've been using it for bleeding because that's kind of what the market has described. But basically, what this test does is it checks your blood and tells you at that moment what you're doing. But somebody else had to discover then, okay, what do we do with that information? So first, I in my lab figured out that I can do TEG on patients with PAD and identify over the course of 6 months, I took their blood at multiple times, what their coagulation profile was, what their clotting profile was over 6 months. Then the patients that clotted off, I looked to see, hey, did this TEG blood thing predict who would clot? And it does. And then I figured out what was the number at which they were clotting. So basically what I'm saying is, you know, somebody figured out for blood glucose, the magic number is about 100. 100 is normal. So I did published a paper, and my team, of course, that identified that if your platelets are kind of dysfunctional at 30%, so 30% inhibition, that's when you don't clot and you don't bleed. And again, this is just the first iteration of it. It's going to take time to really hone down, but that's a good number to start with. So then what we did, and this is where we are today, is we said, all right, let's test this right away. We take permission from our patients at Mass General who get PAD interventions, and we ask them if they are okay being a part of an algorithm. So what's my algorithm? What I do is a patient comes in, I do a procedure on them, and I start them on what is essentially the standard of care, aspirin and Plavix. those two drugs. Start them on that. And then in 7 days, and why 7 days? Because the life cycle of a platelet is 7 days. In 7 days, I check their tag again. And if they haven't hit 30%, it means the drugs are not working for them. So then what do? I send them for Plavix resistance testing, because remember I told you 1 in 4 people is completely resistant. And I replace their Plavix with a drug called ticagrelor or Brilinta, which a lot of your patients may be on. Why? Mm-hmm. Because Brilinta and ticagrelor, which are the same drug, are in the same drug class as Plavix. They're just a stronger drug and less people are resistant. And then I check the blood again in 7 days. And if they've hit 30%, they're treated. So, and if they don't, you know, we manipulate, we do. And over time, if they overshoot, they go too high, we bring them down again with other medication. So it's sort of a, you know, I'm testing you, I'm treating you. I'm testing you, I'm treating you. In kind of checking your blood glucose, giving you the insulin, not just one size fits all, right? Mm-hmm. And what we've discovered is our historical rate of clotting within 6 months was about 20% at our institution. By implementing this algorithm, it has dropped the clotting percent to 3%.
So you're kidding.
Significant drop. Now, again, it's not perfect. We're absolutely in research testing. You cannot go out today to your doctor and say, I want a TEG test, because it doesn't exist for you currently because it's not the standard of care, because we're testing this. But if you are at Mass General, you will have the opportunity to enroll in the study. We're not doing anything special with the blood thinners. That's the key. We're not inventing something new. We're just checking your blood and making sure that the blood thinners you're getting are actually working. And if they're not, trying to tease out what other blood thinners we can use. So we're taking all the tools that already exist in the world and just using them, what I consider, more intelligently.
I mean, what you're saying is logical. I mean, it really makes sense. So I'm sure that you've talked at different physician conferences and with different peer groups about what you're doing. What resistance have you faced in support for this particular research?
Honestly,
and implementation?
No resistance. People are None. Thrilled and excited about this concept. I have a couple of grants that are under review with the NIH, the National Institute of Health. The biggest thing in medicine, I'll tell you this, okay? So I work at Mass General, as I said. Mass General is special because it's the place, many inventions have come out of there, but one of the inventions that have come out of there was the discovery of anesthesia. And there are articles that were published back in 1846 when anesthesia came out, where very powerful surgeons were saying, anesthesia, this is humbug, this is ridiculous, patients need pain for surgery. My point is, anytime anything new happens that challenges what the status quo is, there's a lot of people that have been living in the status quo for a long time that have difficulty accepting something new and novel. So the point I'm making is it's going to take some time for people to come around. But face-to-face, people who do PAD are very excited about this and ready to accept it. We just need more research in this before we go out there and change what we've been doing for the last 50 years.
And I think that that's what doctors that I've talked to have actually brought to my attention when I've shared that one study, the publication that you came out with that talked about your initial stages of this research. And they said, well, nothing to pay attention to yet. And I said, actually, it is something to pay attention to. I mean, yes, more needs to be done. But as a doctor, I would imagine you would look at that study and it would make you think twice and go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe every single time I do prescribe these, I do need to keep a better watch on these patients. And if a patient does come back in 6 months for another procedure, maybe I do need to take a second look at what blood thinners they're on. And for example, if they are on Plavix, maybe do the resistance test at that point versus doing 6 or 7 more procedures over 2 years, right? And get that revolving door of procedures continuing without stopping it and saying, wait a minute, can we make any other changes? And after that ramble, we got to take a break. We'll get back with some finishing thoughts and what's next for Dr. Anita Dua in a moment. So stay with us.
Safeway Inc. is hiring a software engineer / development support in Pleasanton, California. May telecommute. Reports to Pleasanton. 5% domestic travel for meetings. Must have legal right to work in United States. Equal opportunity employer. Subject to background check. $148,703 to $176,800 per year. Email resume to ta.applications@albertsons.com. Attention M. Verona. Reference number 0214MM.
80 million listeners depend on AM radio to always be on, delivering news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports you can trust. AM radio also delivers vital emergency information when you need it most. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to pass the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act to keep AM radio in cars.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
This is 860 AM, The Answer.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about research on blood thinners so we can better personalize the prescriptions of these drugs for patients with especially peripheral artery disease. Marcia is on the line. Marcia, you have a question for Dr. Anita Dua. Go ahead and ask your question.
For somebody who's had an intervention but doesn't typically have any kind of clotting disorder, for instance, I think me, I asked to go off of blood thinners because of all the bruising and the other issues I was having. And eventually my cardiologist and my interventionalist, whatever, he said yes. So I am not on anything, but, you know, he kept me on it for the appropriate amount of time after the intervention. What is your take on that? Is that appropriate for some patients?
You know, honestly, not being on anything is not ideal. At least an aspirin.
Okay. I'm on it.
Okay, good. Yeah. So that's, you know, the fact is, again, it's one of those things we don't know. You know, when you say exactly what you just said, you know, the appropriate amount of time. Well, where did that come from? Well, that came, again, from the cardiology literature. The appropriate amount of time is somewhere between 2 to 6 months. Both the American Heart Association and the European Association that deals with PAD aspect in terms of guidelines have both put out very, very, very weak guidelines by their own accord. I'm not saying they're weak. They say it's weak evidence to say somewhere between 2 to 6 months after your procedure, you should be on some type of antiplatelet. Now we have some new data saying, oh, you should also get this partial bit of anticoagulant, which is the 2.5 of Xarelto twice a day. But really, again, nobody knows. And again, I think we're still approaching it wrong because we're saying, well, you had this surgery, you need this. But, you know, women have less what we call comorbidities. So they've got less risk factors of having PAD than men. Yet they get their legs chopped off more than men, and they get wounds that don't heal more than men. And what we have found in our research at Mass General is that the reason for that is on the same blood thinners as a man, a woman's platelets continue to work. So you're trying to make the platelets stop working, right? But women's platelets are hyperactive. They need more to shut them down. And so all these years, we've been thinking, oh, women have blood vessels that are smaller. Maybe that's why they clot off. But actually, no, there's a scientific reason why they are not getting the same benefit from the blood thinners as males might be getting. And again, this is extremely crude research. We're like digging in the sand and we're looking at the edge of what might be a treasure box. So we got to keep digging. So, you know, I'm hesitant to say, hey, guys, this is the new thing that we need to do. We need to get out there and we need to all be testing our blood. One thing I will say is that the way that we manage blood thinners today is not appropriate. It's the best we can do because it's the best research out there. But it's inappropriate, and we need more research and more effort in this realm, because all these multi-million dollar interventions we're doing on people to get their blood flow open is pointless if you can't keep the blood flow open. The maintenance, if I build you a beautiful house that immediately blows away when you have your first windstorm, what was the point, right? You need something that's going to maintain, sustain, so that you can keep that leg on your body. Getting a procedure once in a while, every three years or something, fine. But not every 6 months. So what we need is more focused research. I encourage you to look at the stuff that we're doing, and I would love to share it with you more. And hopefully we have something published within the year, which is the pilot study, which I described to you about the discrepancy and the decrease in clotting if you do something targeted.
Thank you so much, Dr. Anita Dua. You can follow PADstories.com, and we'll be publishing any new research from Dr. Dua as soon as it comes out. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Everyone's clear on that side. I'm just letting it play out.
you're all good.
You've been listening to The Heart of Innovation with Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips. Our mission is to help patients live a better quality of life through comprehensive education, real-time support, and high-touch advocacy in partnership with thewaytomyheart.org and Abbott. Our purpose is to reduce the 1.5 million heart attacks and strokes and nearly 200,000 amputations annually. For more information regarding topics you've heard discussed on today's program, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. The Heart of Innovation is for educational and informational purposes only, and advice and views shared are not a substitute for medical advice from your own supervising physician. Do not act on any information provided in this show without the explicit consent from your own healthcare team. If you think you are having a medical emergency, call your local emergency number or go to the nearest hospital or emergency room.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.